Thank you and welcome to Scripture on Creation. I'm Scott Kump.
And I'm Dr. Ben Scripture.
Dr. Scripture, in our program today, you want to respond to an email you received, and you said this was not the first time you've gotten this question, but up until now, you'd never done anything about it. Now, I'm curious, just what do you mean by that? I mean, do you mean you've refused to answer the question until now, or what?
No, that's not it, Scott. I just have never fixed the situation that has resulted in several people asking me this question.
Okay, now I'm curious about what the situation is.
Well, I think the easiest thing to do will be to simply read the question, and then I can explain.
All right, so this is an email from James Keim from Orlando, Florida, and he asks, can you be more specific with regards to what you believe about creation? Are you more along the lines of the Scofield Study Bible notes in Genesis 1, or more along the lines of Ken Ham? Were the days representative of ages or 24-hour days?
So the part of James's question that I'm talking about that requires me to do something about it is the first question he asked, Scott. He said, can you be more specific with regards to what you believe about creation? Well, I actually called James because he included his phone number in the email.
Something we would never give out on the air.
Well, that's right. Nobody's ever got to be concerned about us giving your phone number out on the air, but it is nice when they give their name and their where they live. So anyway, I asked him if he had talked to someone or what he had looked at to try and find out what I personally believe about creation. And he said he had looked at my website. And like I said earlier, Scott, I've had other people ask me the same question for the same reason. And I must admit, I have very little on my website about what I believe, at least on the What We Believe page. And so let me read what I have there. It says, the Bible is not intended by God to be a science textbook, but everything it does say about the material world is accurate. With the proper perspective, we will discover that the biblical statements present no necessary contradictions to anything scientists have been able to demonstrate. And that actually is all I have posted on the What Do I Believe page.
Okay. Well, Dr. Scripture, I can certainly see how anyone who is coming across your website or has never heard of you at all and is trying to look up information about you could have all kinds of questions about what you specifically believe after reading that.
Okay. Like I said, I admit it is inadequate in many ways, but I guess when I did that page, I was wanting to avoid being put into a box or a camp, so to speak, like the Scofield camp or the Ken Ham camp. But maybe I did leave the box open a bit too much.
Or, well, another way to put it, you didn't avoid a camp, you avoided the county the camp was in.
All right. So what I'm going to be doing is rewriting, or more accurately, I'll be expanding on the statement I have there on my What We Believe page to include some specific convictions and interpretations of biblical statements about creation. But I also thought it would be good to answer James's questions on the program today. So he asked if what I believe was, quote, more along the lines of the Scofield Study Bible notes in Genesis 1 or more along the lines of Ken Ham, unquote. And to answer that simply, I would be in much greater agreement with Ken Ham than C.I. Scofield's notes on Genesis chapter 1. By the way, Scott, I'm sure you've heard of C.I. Scofield, but do you know what the C.I. stands for?
Honestly, I don't even think I had ever heard the initials. I just heard the name Scofield.
Oh, really?
Well, you know, Scofield Reference Bible.
Well, in the past generation, everybody knew Scofield, and they usually referred to him as C.I. Scofield. Well, those initials stand for Cyrus Ingerson.
Okay.
It's a great old name.
It is.
You know? Cyrus, what a strong name. And Ingerson, I don't know for sure, but probably was his mother's maiden name. You know, they used to give the middle name of a person the mother's maiden name, so that name wouldn't be forgotten.
Well, Dr. Scripture, you should probably explain some of the differences between your beliefs and Cyrus Ingerson Scofield's beliefs, at least concerning his notes on Genesis chapter 1.
Well, you're right, Scott. The main thing that we would differ on is his interpretation of Genesis 1 verse 2, in which he says basically in those notes that the way to understand what verse 2 means is that the earth became formless and void, such that verse 1 "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth," represents a description of an entire first creation that was basically destroyed and thus becoming formless and void and dark. And therefore, a vast amount of time could have passed between the time of that first creation described in verse 1 and the point of time that verse 2 is describing.
Isn't that period of time or time gap between verse 1 and 2 why Schofield's interpretation is called the gap theory?
Well, exactly. And sometimes what people confuse that idea with is the idea that there are gaps between every day. And that isn't what Schofield was proposing. He was just proposing a gap between verse 1 and verse 2. In other words, a period of time before the creation that's described starting in verse 2 began. There is one other difference in his interpretation and what I consider to be the accurate way to understand what God is doing, and that is that on day 4, he simply considers the sun, moon, and stars as appearing, not that God actually created them there on day 4. So he sees sun, moon, and stars created on that first creation as well. And the earth is dark because it's covered. You can't see the light from the sun, moon, and stars on the earth. So that's another fairly significant difference between the way he would interpret what's going on there during the creation on those 6 days, though they were 6 literal days, and the creation as I was interpreting it, that is that God actually created the sun, moon, and stars on day 4. And of course, that's Ken Ham's position as well.
So Schofield comes up with this position to explain what he perceives to be the appearance of the old age of the earth and or the universe.
Yeah, and he puts it all there before day 1, really, or before the second day 1. I don't know how he would describe, you know, what that creation was, because we have no information. Literally, that position would take the entire creation and, as it's described there in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and say that everything was packed in there. A long period of time occurs, and then there's a recreation or a reconstruction, so to speak, there on top of that old destroyed creation.
Okay, so then concerning the other part of James' question, which was, were the days representative of ages or 24-hour days, your interpretation of the meaning of the word day is the same as Schofield and Ken Ham, for that matter.
Well, that's right, Scott. And so I think it's important for people to understand that Schofield wasn't trying to squeeze evolution into Genesis chapter 1. In other words, you've got long periods of time, like the day-age theory does, or the progressive creation theory does. Those interpretations of the creation in Genesis chapter 1 are seeing that a day doesn't really mean a day at all. There can be vast periods of time during which evolution can occur. So the species can adapt and change, and even the sun, moon, and stars just come into existence through vast periods of time, even billions of years, according to the progressive theory of creation, where stars form and nebulae and so on and so forth, and those things are still happening today. But what Schofield believed was that the earth was rotating, and each day represented the earth's rotation one time on its axis, and God, day by day, over a 6-day period, essentially reconstructed a new good creation, as says there at the end of Genesis chapter 1, and it was very good. This new creation, this good creation, on top of what had been a destroyed creation, and we might say a destroyed first creation there in Genesis 1:1. So with respect to my belief about creation, as revealed in Genesis chapter 1, I would definitely be in the Ken Ham, and before him, really, the John Whitcomb, Henry Morris camp, than the Schofield camp.
Okay, Dr. Scripture, we still have some time left, and James did have one more question in his email.
Mm-hmm.
It says, on a different but somewhat related theological note, do you believe that the darkness over the earth in Genesis 1 represented Satan's rule and that God remade everything? I forget what that is called.
All right, well, what he's forgetting is what we've already discussed, the gap theory or the reconstruction theory. And what he's especially referring to here is the darkness that's described there in Genesis 1:2. It says, and darkness was over the surface of the deep. And what that really is interpreted to mean, according to Schofield's notes, is that the earth on that first creation was beautiful, it was bright, there was light. And then when Satan fell, he was cast to earth, he destroyed the earth, as we've already been talking about. And that's why there was darkness on the earth. And so, in a sense, it's almost considered to be more of a metaphorical idea of darkness being on the earth because that represented evil. So if Satan's ruling, there's evil there, and essentially he trashes that creation. And so then what God basically does is to correct everything, to get back to a creation that he desires, he reconstructs on top of that old earth. And that's how there can be an old earth within the gap theory, within Scofield's interpretation of Genesis. So all the layers that Whitcomb and Morris essentially interpreted to be the layers from the flood, he considered that to be a result of the destruction of that first creation. So it's a reconstruction on top of an old destroyed earth. And that really is essentially the main point that Whitcomb and Morris addressed in that famous book, The Genesis Flood. Now, there's one thing about that interpretation of seeing the first creation in Genesis 1:1 represented with the words, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." There's an interesting verse in the book of Revelation that, in my mind, really provides us with the ability to question, just from the Bible, period, the idea of having Genesis 1:1 be a first creation and then this reconstruction on top of that being a second creation. That's the way I would interpret it anyway. Look in Revelation chapter 21, verse 1. This is John, and he's describing this vision that the Lord is giving him. And when we get to the very end, John sort of summarizes what he sees this way. Revelation 21:1, "And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth passed away, and there is no longer any sea." So what's John looking at? He's looking at this new heaven and this new earth, but he describes the earth and heaven that he was a part of, the one that we are a part of, because God hasn't come back and done the new heaven and new earth yet. He describes that as the first heaven and first earth. So I would suggest that that makes it very difficult to adhere to this gap theory, which says, well, there was a first heaven and earth, and then the reconstruction of that all makes this basically what we live in, a second heaven and second earth. And then when God comes and changes everything again, which John is describing in Revelation 21, that I think would be the third heaven and third earth, right?
Exactly.
So I think we have a problem, even just from this text in Revelation 21, with the interpretation of the gap theory and how what we live in is a second heaven or second earth, or at least a reconstructed one. And so I really do appreciate James's letter today. And let's conclude the program by reading this very encouraging verse in Revelation 21, verse 4. It says, "And he shall wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there shall no longer be any death. There shall no longer be any mourning or crying or pain. The first things have passed away." And that's not what I say. That's what Scripture says.